Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm your host, John Naster, and it's summer. It's summer where I am up here in Canada, in Toronto, and I hope that it is where you are and that things are settling down and becoming more normal, or we're becoming normalized to whatever it is that's happening in 2020. Either way, thank you for stopping by, and I really do appreciate it. And I value your time, as I'm sure you value your own. So let's just jump into it. My guest today is an investor, triathlete, lover of handstands, and an entrepreneur who truly believes that you can get paid to be yourself. And she's kind of living proof that this is true. In 2009, she left her corporate job and started a blog called The Suitcase Entrepreneur. That became a full-time business and it enabled her to travel the world for 7 years. I would like to say, and I said it during the interview, I believe, that she was a digital nomad before digital nomads were even a thing. Today, she's settled down on a homestead in New Zealand and has refocused her attention on showing others how to build businesses around their unique skill sets. Now, let's hack Natalie Sisson. Right now, as you have probably noticed, the world is changing and businesses are adapting in different ways. So in these uncertain times, how do you make sure marketing gets the results that you need? LinkedIn can help you reach people who are looking for opportunities to help their businesses and can focus your campaigns on the objectives for today. So your marketing just works better. With over 62 million decision makers on LinkedIn, you are able to connect with the right business leaders, people who are there to learn how to be more effective at their jobs and find products to help their companies. LinkedIn marketing can help you build campaigns using objective-based advertising, which allows you to customize the campaign experience based on the action you want your customer to take. Whether you're trying to drive clicks to a website, generate leads, or even generate video views, LinkedIn has the targeting tools that can help you focus on reaching your precise audience down to their job title, company name, location, and more. In fact, you can reach people you already know based on who has visited your site and who you've contacted in the past. Try it for yourself. LinkedIn is offering a free $100 LinkedIn ad credit to launch your first campaign. Simply visit linkedin.com/hack. Once again, to see how LinkedIn can help you with a free $100 LinkedIn ad credit to launch your first campaign, go to linkedin.com/hack. linkedin.com/hack. Some terms and conditions apply. And with that said, let's get into the conversation. All right, we are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today I know I say that like I have a special guest on. I say that oftentimes. But today I truly, truly have a very, very special guest. Natalie, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I'm really glad to be here.
That's awesome. I'm not just saying it. You were one of my original people that were on this show. Now, in the 500s of episodes later, and after meeting you 6 years ago, I'm really excited to catch back up and see where you are at, where, and just sort of what we can do for the listener out there.
100%.
Awesome. But this is something I want to do, is I just want to start the conversation here because I think this is where it should start. And this is specifically about you, Natalie, as this entrepreneur. Can you tell me, what's the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think it's my superpower, as I've now realized after many years, is that I can see the big picture vision, but I can also take it down to the granular, what the heck do I have to do today to make that happen? Not all the time, but most of the time. I think that's quite a rare skill, because usually you get these visionaries or big picture thinkers, and then you get the people who are really great with detail. And it's been a self-taught school. I prefer to hang out in the visionary creating aspect, but I can actually go, okay, if that's where I want to be in 3 years' time, what do I need to do today to make that happen?
That's cool. Is this like, do you mean that when you take it down to that, like what the heck needs to be done, do you mean figuring that out and then delegating it out? Or do you mean that you can actually get in there as well? You have the skill to just like get into the trenches and this needs to be done today, this week, and next month?
Yeah, a bit of both, actually. So I've become a lot better at delegating over the years, but as I probably even just realized this week, and this is what I love about entrepreneurship, you're always learning, is that I still tend to take on too much myself not because I don't think other people can do it, just because I do it quickly and effectively and I've done it for so long. And so a little bit of both. When I find somebody that I love, I can delegate the heck out of things. And when I find people who do it better than me, and I'm more than happy to do that. But I think it's just in my business, it's just this ever cycle of how do we improve this or make this more effective or streamline this more? Because as you know, as a content creator, it's a 24/7 kind of job or business, and you're constantly creating, and that can get out of hand if you don't have great systems for it. So I'd say probably a little bit of both.
2010, I believe it was, you launched what became the Suitcase Entrepreneur. I believe it was about 6 months old, the blog at the time. And at that point, you quit your corporate life and you just dove into this. It's now 2020, which means it's been 10 years.
I know, isn't that nuts?
What's something to you that is like, I don't know whether it's shocking, but what's something that's very glaringly obvious, obviously different today, like online, than it was 10 years ago?
God, I feel like so much, even though some things have changed so little. Like when I started out blogging, I already thought that I'd missed the blogging boat, which is ironic. And when I started podcasting in 2012, I thought I'd missed the podcasting boat, which is clearly, there's still people every single day starting blogs and podcasts.
We always think that, don't we?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter when.
I feel like technology and software and solutions have made it even easier for people to start and build their online businesses. There was always tools and software around, but I feel like it's even more common now. They're more streamlined, they're cheaper, they're more effective. You know, I used to do a lot of that. I'm sure you did as well, patching things together to make it work. And now I feel like there's just so many of those off-the-shelf solutions for us so that we can get on with doing the bit that we do best, which is hopefully showing up and helping our community and educating them. And I think the other thing, well, this is definitely since the pandemic, but is that more people are comfortable with working online and working remotely and working from a laptop and a Wi-Fi connection. Whereas when I started, as you said, way back then, I mean, people used to go, how do you do that? They were stunned. They couldn't fathom that you could sit in a cafe in Vietnam and run a business from your laptop and a Wi-Fi. And I feel like that actually stayed for a long, long time, right up until more recently, when, especially here in New Zealand where I am now, it's taken a bit longer to get into that digital age. So those feel like two that are pretty important and are consistently, you know, just going to continue to evolve into AI and all the goodness there in the future of work.
Definitely. This change that has happened recently, it's happened obviously where people have started companies that said they could never, this company, we're an old school company, we could never work remote, blah, blah, blah. It's like you're forced to, and oh, we figured it out. Yeah, you just work from home. But the idea of like even 5 years ago, it started to get hard, like in North America, to go to a coffee shop and work because all the tables were now filled with people with laptops. And 5 years prior to that, you were the only one. People are always asking, like, what the hell are you doing? What do you have your computer for? Just drink a coffee. So it's interesting how that's changed. But this idea of this like digital nomad, which I guess now with travel being banned, is also changed again. But you were like at the forefront of that. I don't even know if it was called digital nomads at the time, or if it was just you people just traveling the world with laptops.
I think it was.
Entrepreneurs, I guess.
Yeah, I think it was, but it was very, like, I remember when I first said to somebody, I'm a location independent entrepreneur, or I'm a digital nomad. They're like, oh, that's such a cool term. Did you come up with it? And I was like, I surely didn't. But so many people hadn't heard of it at that point. And I think even actually just, sorry, coming back to your question before of what's changed. Like when I started, there was no Airbnb, there was no Uber. You did everything yourself. It was like the Wild West. You had to actually book accommodation and figure it out. And phones didn't necessarily have the best GPS back then. And there weren't always amazing offline map options. So you had to like, it was hard work. It was kind of like an adventure. And then there's people now who are traveling and I see them, I'm like, you guys got it easy. You know, you just Airbnb it and Uber it. And there was none of that. There was haggling with taxis. It was getting ripped off in different currencies, being paid in cash. So yeah, different times back then. And there certainly was not a plethora of Wi-Fi cafes. Like it was a pain in the ass, but it was exciting. And that's what made it really cool.
And then at some point between 2010 and now, you've switched from the focus on Suitcase Entrepreneur and you've moved over to like a personal brand. I mean, Suitcase Entrepreneur was Natalie Sisson's, so it is you, but still you've now moved to nataliesisson.com. Mm-hmm. Think back to 10 years ago plus 6 months that it was when you started, because I know a lot of people right now, they get stuck at that very first step of like wanting to start a site. And it's like, should I start it in this? What if I don't, what if I'm not interested in that in like 2 years? Or should it be in my name? And it's like, and they'll literally think about that for 5 years rather than just taking that step. Mm-hmm. You took that step and then you even pivoted after that and it doesn't seem to have held you back.
Well, I'm not going to lie. I feel like it held me back. And in terms of it was quite the 180 degree shift that I made. I mean, you've got to admit, I was like traveling the world like a crazy lady, fully under the Suitcase Entrepreneur brand, which still exists. And then I come back to New Zealand and buy a lifestyle property, which for those people listening who don't know what that is, essentially it's a beautiful big ass house on a decent piece of land, got chickens and a dog and settled in with my partner. So I went from being this single digital nomad traveling the world to this. And it kind of was like, what the heck? So it took me almost 2 years, Johnny, I'm not going to lie, to like figure out, well, who am I when I'm not the Suitcase Entrepreneur? Because I had taken on that identity probably a little too much. Just so many people knew me as either Natalie Sisson or the Suitcase Entrepreneur that you kind of become your own brand. And it was really hard to step away from it and go, well, what do I have left if I don't have that? What do I stand for? What are my skills? Which is crazy, really, because all the skills and experience that I built that business with were still with me. But it felt like in some ways I'd lost them. It's a really hard thing to describe. So I feel like in that moment I had to be a little bit like Madonna, who's the queen of reinvention, and just go, okay, well, who do I want to be now? How do I want to show up and serve the world? What skills do I have? What new skills do I want? How do I want to position myself? What am I interested in now? Which for me was definitely more about the future of work, which I guess I'd always been in. It's hilarious. It's called the future of work because I feel like I've been in that space for ages. But, you know, how do I educate myself more in that and stand a bit more in that authoritative space to understand and know that? But I'm not going to lie, it was not easy. There were times when I just felt really lost and all that stuff that I built didn't feel quite as relevant to me anymore because I wasn't traveling the world and it didn't feel in alignment. It almost felt a little bit like, well, I can't speak to this anymore. When you're in the thick of a business, I feel you can talk to it. When you're not, it feels like you're talking about a past life. So it was a long journey, but a really, really useful one to deeply reflect on what's important to me, what value do I provide, where do I want to be in the future, how do I want to show up, what haven't I done yet in my life, what things would I like to stretch myself with and challenge, and what have I already got that I definitely don't want to just chuck away because I've spent so long honing those skills and experience.
So you could have become like the homestead entrepreneur from the suitcase, the exact opposite of everything. But so this is interesting. So this is like reinvention, which is a huge topic right now because I think, well, in the United States, 40 million people lost their job. Lots of people are being forced into reinventing what they do for a living. But then we also, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but as you did this, like, I think we're pretty much the same age. And like, you also have to sort of reinvent yourself as you get older because you're not the person you were when you were 20 and 30. So there's that. But then at the same time, you'd basically given up your entire business you built. So the struggle between like trying to reinvent personally and also business-wise, it must be so tough like to do that in that sense, yet also probably being super comfortable and feeling great where you are.
It was so hard. I feel like I've done this so many times, like when I gave up my 8 years in the corporate world to just quit and fly to Canada and create my first startup with a friend that I met there. And then I did that again when I left that to pursue my blog, which was literally just a blog. And then I did that again after, you know, almost 8 years of building the Suitcase Entrepreneur to just almost start from scratch. To other people, it may not look like that, but to me, it really did. I'm not entirely sure why I could keep doing this, Johnny, but I do feel it stretches and challenges you to like really delve deep into what is important to you in life and what's the next step. And the other thing is nothing is forever. And I feel like during this particular crisis that we're going through at the time of recording, so many people have realized how either well built their businesses and resilient, which mine certainly has been, or how massively exposed it's been because there's one revenue stream, or one source of income, or one audience, or one market. So I do kind of feel like these things make you strong. You switch and change and have to rebuild. They force you to really look inwards at what's important, as I said, and then what's coming next and how you can sort of stay on top of those trends. And that's something that I've always enjoyed doing.
Nothing is forever. As you were saying that, or right before that, I was thinking you totally understand the sunk cost fallacy, where people tend to want to, 6 or 7 or 8 years in the corporate world, you typically don't want to give that up because you've spent so much time getting there. Even if it doesn't bring you happiness, that's just what you sort of push through. In your business now, is this something that you help? Because you have this goal, like a very lofty goal, to help 1,000 women earn $10,000 a month. That's huge. That's a lot of people. Is this something that people, when they come to you, are struggling with making that leap, or is it something else?
Yeah, it is a lofty goal, and it's a mission that I created earlier this year, and it's absolutely driven me in every single day, which is so super awesome. I think it's something that is going to be reached over a 3 to 4 year period. Like, I'm not just assuming I can go out and impact 1,000 women today. It's something that I want to grow slowly. And then in terms of these women, that's even been a shift for me to just focus on women entrepreneurs. Not that I don't love men and everybody, but I could see that for me, they're the women that I can help most. And 80% of my clients already were women. And yeah, it's so fascinating. When I put out my recent membership of the 10K Club, which is solely focused on shifting your mindset to build a business that earns you 10K and beyond consistently every month, all the women who applied and joined were like, I've always had this goal of 10K. And it was just, to me, it was fascinating. I feel like I finally hit the nail on the head once again. I think you know in your business, when you release something and offer a product or service that just nails it, and people are like, yeah, this is exactly what I'm working towards and exactly what I want to be part of. And so I've always taken a lot of time to survey my audience and community and understand what they want, because I'm not the one with all the answers. I can create till the cows come home, which is such a weird reference. But anyway, now I live on a rural property, maybe that's why. But you got to ask people what they want and not operate in silo and create from the space of, I think I know what they want. You ask. And I've always been asking, and the same things always come up. You know, it's all about how do I have financial freedom and create consistent recurring income? How do I have more time freedom and systemize stuff? How do I get my content out there in the right way without overwhelming myself? And then there's always the mindset issues. How do I be expert enough? How do I get over imposter syndrome and the inner critic and the fears and all the things that are always plaguing us, especially when we're setting out to do some big things?
So there's a lot in there. But I want to, because you nailed it with this offering and like it's perfect for your market and they love it. I know you said you survey your audience, but like what exactly does that mean and entail for other people listening?
Yeah. So I actually do an annual, it's called the annual survey or something better than that. And I essentially just ask a bunch of questions. I really like Ryan Levesque's book, Ask. And I use that sort of methodology to figure out what their number one challenge is in business or struggle is in business right now. And then a series of questions on where they're at and what they'd like to learn. Also, what content they'd like to see and in what format. And then I also always find out where are they finding my stuff? Like, how are they consuming what I'm putting out? And what do they value? And it just drives everything. It drives my entire marketing content strategy, because in the last one, for example, more people were listening and watching videos over my podcast, which is a first, even though my podcast has grown heaps this year. And it was just interesting that every year I feel it changes because things are always changing and people use different platforms to gather their information. And also their needs are changing slightly depending on the situation. So that's one way that I do it. And I do that either through Typeform or in Google Form, to be honest. But also outside of that, I'm always asking at the end of a course that I've run, for example, or an offer that I've put out, I always get feedback on, did that resonate? How useful was it to you? What else do you need? So I feel like even just in email interactions, if somebody emails me saying, hey, I really loved your latest podcast, et cetera, I'll often just ping them back and go, that's, you know, where are you at in your business? What's happening for you? Like, what's top of mind? And they're always surprised at that, but that's how I keep my finger on the pulse. Otherwise, I do feel, as you said, you're operating in this ivory tower going, I have all the answers. That's just not true.
Right. And then at some point from this information, you do have to grab one of those ideas, though, and then say, I do know how to do this and I'll take action.
Yeah, 100%. So is this... I think it's good. Sorry, I was going to say, I feel like it has to be aligned with my strengths and what I can offer, because they might go, oh, could you do this? And I'm like, actually, I don't know. So it definitely still has to align back with what I can provide and offer. But if I can't myself, that's when I look for great partners or people who are doing that really well so that I can share their work.
Okay. And then you come up with this idea. It's like you've surveyed your audience annually using the ask method, and you've determined that they, like, your audience needs this like X from you, and it's perfectly aligned with you. Do you then just like, okay, heads down, 3 months, I'm going to build out this massive, beautiful course, or do you do something else?
No, never. So thanks for asking that. So if I launch a damn course accelerator, and the one thing that I teach in it that I don't see many other course teachers doing is telling you how to pre-sell your course before you've even created it. And that may sound crazy to people listening, but why on earth would you put, as you said, 3 months or hundreds of hours of work into creating a course that you haven't even tested if anybody wants yet? So I'm a huge fan of piloting and saying, if I were to produce this thing that would cover off on these things and allow you to feel these ways and get these results, would that be valuable to you? And people are often like, why, yes. Or sometimes they're like, nah, not often, but you never know. And then I'll go ahead and I'll actually create like a sales page for it. And I'll say, here's the thing. I'll really get deep into, I'll often do some customer surveys once again, or just ask those people who came back to me, and I'll refine it more, and I'll put out a sales page that's pretty much, here's the thing, here's what I'm going to go ahead and do. It's launching in whether it's 2 weeks or 4 weeks time. And if you like the sound of this, you can get on board early, whether there's an early bird rate. And I love that, because if people, enough people buy that I have set in my goals and what would make it worthwhile for me to go ahead and produce, then I know I've hit a home run, or I've at least got something that's really valuable to people. And if nobody's interested, then I haven't gone through that entire creation process thinking this is the best idea since sliced bread, only to come out at the other end going, oh my God, crickets, which is the worst thing in the world to experience.
So the opposite of what most people do, myself included, which is create a course and then try and write a sales page that will sell that course. You write the sales page and try and sell that course.
You know, when you write a sales page, though, you're actually going through the problem, the solution, what's the struggle, where's the challenge, what do they need? Like, it's, for me, it is actually quite a cathartic experience to go through, because you're still really thinking through carefully what it is that you're going to produce and why that's going to help. And you do put in some work behind it, right? Like, there's thought and structure to the framework and the course curriculum and what might be included. But yeah, I pretty much do not create anything anymore unless people are willing to pay for it up front and say, yeah, this is exactly what I need. Because I've just been there and the heartache is real.
Exactly. And so you write all your own copy?
I do. I did actually, in the past, I have hired copywriters, especially around much bigger launches. And this year, actually, I wrote it all, and then I got a copywriter in to zhuzh it. I love that word, zhuzh, but just to really make sure that I was on track. And she did an incredible job. And I was like, oh, yeah, maybe I need some more of these people on my team. So I do think it's really good to get an external copywriter, just because they refined the art and they can just make what you're saying that much more powerful and crisp and on point.
Right. It's like, I think any sort of writing, and I mean, it helps to have that other person look at it, because you're the one created this and you don't really, well, you don't see, you'll never see it in the same way. Do you have like a framework of some sort, or did you learn copywriting somewhere that other people could learn?
I have learned it over the years, but mainly through osmosis. I'm reading so many emails and so many sales pages and just seeing what I think people do really well. I also, in my course, I include this 12-step sales page sort of format, which I got off, and I credit always if I'm using something, if I got through various courses that I think I'd come across over the years. So I feel like as an entrepreneur, one of the most important skills you can have, or two of the most important, is to understand how to be eloquent with your words and a copywriter that can cut through everything and get to the heart of it, and also really understanding what great marketing is. But, you know, those are skills that are learned. So I think it was just purely through observing, going, what did I love about that copy that made me want to buy? Or what did I hate about this person's thing that I will never include? And I also really like writing. I've written 2 books. I'm writing my 3rd right now. It doesn't mean I'm a great writer, but I I have a knack for writing, and I like to speak as if I'm just speaking to my friend across the table. So that is pretty much often how I will create those things, and using that 12-step framework, which is really just kind of the chart of where are you going from and what's the end result going to be, and what's the value for you and the benefits and all those good things, so that people can really resonate and see themselves in that sales page.
Did you say where that 12-step process is from?
I'm going to find it for you. I can't even remember. This is, I'll bring it up while I'm looking for you.
Sure.
I do confess them.
So this seems to be something that comes up with you over and over and over again since the time I've met you, then looking into you before that, and now through this, and even just now when you're like, not that I'm that good of a writer, but I'm writing my third book. How do you continually do things that you maybe don't feel like you are the absolute best at, but you are really good at it and you know it, and you don't psych yourself out halfway through the project to be like, oh, this sucks?
Well, first off, I just want to get back. The person that I'm crediting is David Frey at Marketing Profs, and he written up a blog post with 12 steps, and then I edited them. So, but yeah, awesome work. And there's plenty online if people want to look up the sales page method. And I always love to make mine a bit more unique because I don't always love following the rules, but there's a reason why there's great frameworks out there. Oops. To answer your question on books, it's funny because the one that I'm writing right now is completely different to my first two, which were much more business focused. And this one's called Suck It Up, Princess. And it's really a sort of a personal growth, self-help book. And it's going to be very vulnerable. And it's going to be a whole lot of my stories of when I've had to suck it up and how I got through that, with the kind of coaching and tools behind it, really. And it's going to be a bit fun, and it's going to be a bit sassy. And I'm honestly finding it really hard to write because so much of my personal story is in there. And that's newer for me. I've always shared like my story, but not so much when it's been like places where I've failed or screwed up or... No, I always share that too, but this just feels more real. So I think that writer's block and writer's inner critic is real, and I face it every single time I open my manuscript. And I've just taken 20 authors through this process themselves. And sounds terrible. Every time I write a book, I launch something called Write Your Damn Book, and I bring people along on the ride with me. And we turn up and we write every single week. It's really fun. And it also holds me accountable and gets me to turn up. And I have a writing session after this today. So I actually don't know if I have the answer to that. But what's on the other side of fear is usually the fact that I focus on. People aren't going to be able to get the gift or the message of this book if I don't write it. So literally suck it up, princess, and write it. Because who are you to stand behind your fear and worry? Put it out there. And if it helps one person, then it's been worth it. If it helps two or more, fantastic. So for me, whenever I'm getting stuck and I'm not good enough or my writing sucks, I'll just be like, hang on a minute. By not putting this out there, who are you not actually able to help? How are you, but are you limiting yourself? You're in fact, in some ways, limiting the opportunity for somebody to learn from you today or to be able to take this and run with it and do some amazing things. That usually gets me out of my own way when I focus on the people that I want to help.
Does this get easier as you progress in your career?
I don't think it does. That's a great question. I think you get more resilient and better at moving past blocks and dealing with them and working on them. So then you, because, you know, every single entrepreneur is hopefully going to grow and stretch themselves. So every single time you find yourself on the edge of growth, you come up against these same blocks. Am I capable of doing this? Is it me? Am I enough? Or do I have the experience? Is this possible? And so every single time you grow and you push, you're going to find yourself back there. So I think you just get answering those questions and believing in yourself and continuing to work on your mindset and going, no, this has worked before, or even if it hasn't worked before, here's the reason why I'm the person to do it. Here are my credentials. I often come back to like, what are your credentials? What have you done before? Especially in the time of, I can't do this. So I think it gets easier a little, but I think the day that anything's really easy, it's not worth doing, right? So I feel like maybe that's the point at which you don't do it anymore when it's so easy and in flow. Not that I don't love easiness and in flow, but I'm just saying if something's super easy for too long, maybe you're not challenging yourself enough and there's another level of growth for you.
I love it. I love it. If you could right now with obviously today, so everything you know and even your knowledge of like helping other people through these things, if you could sit down with like the suitcase entrepreneur Natalie Sisson 10 years ago, what would you tell her?
Slow the heck down in your travel. I don't know. I just traveled so much for so long. But the other thing I would tell her is it's all a learning journey and you're just going to continue to learn. So just enjoy the journey and never stop learning and go easy on yourself, actually. That's more for me, but I think for many people who are out there who might be able to listen in, I feel, especially as entrepreneurs, it's such a big job and a privilege and an honor that we have, but it's also one of the most challenging yet rewarding things you can do. And I feel sometimes we just need to go a little easier on ourselves and credit ourselves for what we have done so far and enjoy the journey up to that point before we forge forth into the future of all the new things we're going to create and do.
That was an awesome answer. So, Natalie, we've talked about your business, your two businesses and the melding of them throughout the conversation. But could you now specifically tell the listener where they can find you and who you're looking to help?
Yeah, I would love for them to reach out. I'm all over social media, but I particularly enjoy Instagram. So at Natalie Sisson, if they want to DM me or say that they listened to this podcast, I'd love to know what they got out of it, if it helped. Otherwise, I'm over at nataliesisson.com. Very easy to find me. And the people that I really most want to help, those people who are wanting to learn how to get paid to be them, monetize all their skills, expertise, and knowledge, and basically simply be them, but earn a great living from that, doing impactful work that also gives them the lifestyle that they want. So if that sounds good, I have a free guide and audio on my site that pretty much walks you through my 9 steps to monetizing yourself and how to do that.
You are so awesome. I thank you so much. It was really, really, really good to get to chat with you again, Natalie. So nataliesisson.com is the site. Suitcase Entrepreneur, if you want to see it, exists still. There was some books talked about, the sales page, some forms. I'll link to all that in the show notes for you, as well as I'll track down all of Natalie's social media, but it's mostly at Natalie Sisson. So you can find it yourself, probably. Natalie, it's just was really good to have you here. It's great to have you sharing with the audience so openly and honestly. I truly, truly appreciate it. And I don't know, just keep doing what you're doing because it's truly awesome to watch.
Thank you. It's been such a blast, such a pleasure. I can't believe it flew by. And it was a bit like a trip down memory lane from when we first met to where we are now.
Well, that was a lot of fun getting to catch up with my old friend, Natalie, who I haven't seen in years, but it's good to get to sit down with her and have that conversation. Make sure you follow up with Natalie. She would love to hear from you. She'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have. And I mean, she's literally had worldly experience for almost a decade. So she's a good person to sort of track down and get your questions answered. You can find all her information on our site, hacktheentrepreneur.com/podcast, if you wish, or you can track her down at nataliesisson.com or the Suitcase Entrepreneur and all social medias there around that. It's been an absolute blast. I hope that your summer is going well, and I hope that it continues to. Once again, I appreciate you stopping by. I truly, truly do. I know there's a lot of options for podcasts out there these days, and it's cool to get to spend this sort of half hour with you. So please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.